Operational risk is the area that I'm particularly focused on. I've seen a lot over 20 years, and now working within as an independent consultant at PFS, I'm in the position of being able to look for clients and go and assess their operational risk. I've just got the usual general advice warning. Just an overview of what I'd like to talk to you about. The influencing factors, the things that impact on operational risk, what I call the critical interdependencies, because there are so many keys to making sure everything fits. I always see group insurance as a jigsaw, and all the pieces have to fit, but none of the pieces are the same shape. So it's one of those really tricky ones that you've got to make sure everything fits together. And I can tell you categorically they don't. So certainly not the current state of the nation, but hopefully we can improve things. As you're all very aware, legislation's changing rapidly, and the regulators are increasing their oversight. They're much looking with a great deal of focus on the operational risk aspect of the superannuation industry. I'm going to talk a bit about market competition and the effects it has on operational risk. And I want to spend a reasonable amount of time talking about policies, communications and administration, because that really is, I guess, the floorboards of group insurance. And then look at what can go wrong and what can be done. I'm frequently asked, so what sort of things do you see? And I could write a book and probably then have to leave the industry, or everybody else would ahead of me. But I think it gives a bit of an insight. And I don't plan to write a book. These are some of the factors, competition. Obviously, group insurance has finally had its day, I suppose. It's been waiting in the background a long time, overshadowed by investment, but certainly the GFC prompted funds to look at insurance as a giving them some competitive edge, and certainly that's taken off, and group insurance is really seen as a key driver in the market. Pricing, unfortunately, price has to be important. Unfortunately, it seems to still rank us almost number one. I mean, people often say it's not number one when it comes to assessing which arrangement fund will go to, but it certainly has a very influencing factor. But it's, as the actuaries in the room won't need to be convinced that it has an end result and certainly impacts on the final profitability. AALs, gone are the days there were $20,000 or $30,000 AALs. Now we're looking at $600,000 without doing anything. $1 million, $1.2 million. So the stakes are getting high. Data has always been an issue. I think it's becoming a bigger issue. I think it's, and certainly APRA are putting a focus on data. That the data integrity right from the time you're doing tenders. Policies, it's the key. The policy is the key. Unfortunately, we've all seen policies that haven't been signed, but there's a lot more to than unsigned policies. Member communications, really is an issue, because when push comes to shove and a member has a claim, which is generally when the focus becomes comes on the policy and on the communication and on the PDS. Whatever the member has that's going to be in their best interest, when it gets in the hands of the lawyers, is going to be what's going to stand up and really be counted. And the stakeholders. Obviously, there's a lot of stakeholders, and they have a big impact. I was thinking about this, actually. I had a quick look at my presentation last night, and I thought I really could have put one more thing in there, which doesn't sound highly technical, but, well, not technical at all, but it's really overarching, and I think a huge influencing factor is the rush to get everything done. And if you talk to people who are heavily involved and who see the problems that arise out of group insurance, it generally comes back down to things having to be done in a hurry. Everybody's keen to get it done. Get it in, get it in, get it in, get it done. And all that's happening are the problems are being exacerbated. There's further interdependencies, which I'll talk to you further about in a minute. Legislative changes. Anybody who's saw Friday, out came some more, the prudential regulations, the next draft, we're getting closer to the end, and I'll talk a bit more about that later because it's certainly high on the agenda, and the My Super, which are all going to impact on the rush. Everybody needs to get this done. There's not much time to do it. Administration is critical. I spend a lot of time listening to, the administrators or the insurers. It's an automatic reaction. Oh, is it all with the insurers, this operational risk? Is it all with the administrators? It's not. It's I do a lot of operational risk reviews, and every occasion it actually has come out that it's not actually the insurers got the least problem. If provided they've provided a sound policy and it's all signed off, it's really the trustees and the administrators, that's where the problems lie. The insurers in the room will be delighted to hear that. Doesn't mean to say the problems don't end up with them. Process. Everybody's got different processes, but are the processes aligned to the actual policy? Knowledge levels. I meet a lot of administrators who are highly frustrated. They're good people, but they're put in front of a system and said, press the button and this is what happens and this is, you know, it'll all work. Well, if you haven't, you know, it's like any computer. What goes, you've got to put the right information in to get the right information out. And I come across people who say, we've been so frustrated. I knew this wasn't right, but I didn't know enough and I didn't know who to turn to because nobody else knew about it either. And, of course, the economic climate. But I won't spend too much time on that because everybody knows the influence that the GFC and had on, well, and such downturns in the market and reduced employment will have on claims. Although I understand there's a lot of death claims happening as opposed to just TPD disability claims. I put this slide in because people sometimes say to me, "What is operational risk?" And I think this is the best way I can describe it by drawing. I'm a bit of a drawer anyway. And I put the insurance policy at the centre in purple because everything hinges around that insurance policy. It's the source of truth. That's the contract that's been set up between the trustee and the insurer. The trustee has its own administration agreement with the administrator. I've put the reinsurer in there. It wasn't that long ago that it was almost taboo to, you know, you can't ask who the reinsurer is. That's not anybody's business. It's becoming much more of the reinsurer's business because they're taking a lot more of the risk. These AALs are getting very high, and so they're sharing a lot of the risk, and I think they're going to be starting to look more when large claims come through because there is a limit to how many large claims insurers and reinsurers are going to be handling, and I think they're going to be starting to look more at, is this right? Should this person really have had that cover? The insurance policy, once it's done, it's just has to be administered, and that's the issue. But it doesn't all come back down to the administrator's problem. We've got. I'll talk a little bit more about that shortly because I've got quite a strong feeling about where some of these problems come from. The tide's certainly turning. APRA's focus is increasing. I've had a number of discussions with them. They're very interested in operational risk. As we've seen insurance strategies are coming out, and anybody who has read the insurance prudential regulations from Friday, I have to say I was delighted to see the insurance management framework. There's a whole piece that's been added there. Just for those who haven't, there's just on one small clause, it says, an RSC licensee's insurance management framework is the totality of systems, structures, policies, processes and people to manage the offering of insured benefits and the acquiring of insurance in relation to those benefits. What that's doing is, I think really for the first time in all these tranches that we've seen, it's finally saying, you know, the administration is being outsourced but the administration responsibility is not being outsourced by the licensees, and that administration of those insurance policies remains the responsibility of the trustees, and now it's really being put in writing. So I was pleased to see that. I think it could go a little further. And I'll talk a bit more about that as we go through. Capital requirements for insurers. That really came out as the headline. Everybody was talking about capital requirements for insurers. I think there's... insurers need to have that to be, you know, protect their profitability and to check that they can stay around effectively, I guess. But it doesn't come down to just the insurers. I think they're really, in some ways, in a hiding to nothing, and reinsurers, because they're so far away from the action. Once they've put that policy in place, they don't do the administration. They do very little administration now. Insurers once upon a time did, and now I think most of us would agree it wasn't really their school. But now, once they've handed that policy over and it's being administered, yes, they're doing getting a bit involved, trying to help get underwriting through faster with auto underwriting. They're trying to get claims through because there's a lot of pressure on that. But they're really quite far removed from making sure, and this is the whole essence of what needs to be done, to make sure that what the cover that the person should have is what they've got. And that's really the problem, as I see. And I'll give you some more examples of that. Obviously, MySuper's happening, and there's going to be a lot of people peddling. Well, they're peddling. They've been waiting to peddle fast on the insurance, but they haven't had enough information. A lot more information came out on Friday, which will mean that people can go forward and put out, get moving on the insurance. I've been finding that clients have been asking me to help with their strategy, but you know, we've only been able to guess up to now. Now we know what the benchmarks have been set. I won't go into all the detail. I mean, if you can. I'm happy to answer the questions, but at least we can see what's required, what benefits will be allowed, and the fact that there's going to be a little bit more room for tailoring across a membership base, which will help. And the shorter PDSs, obviously. Shorter PDSs, I don't know who came up with the brilliant idea that a couple of pages for insurance, but that really means you're going to have an extremely good, you have to have a very good insurance guide, which really does reflect the policy. Market competition, I think, has got a lot of responsibility for the operational risk issues. We see funds, you know, Investor Weekly, Investor Daily, so-and-so, such-and-such a fund has gone to market, they've got new arrangements, they've changed insurers, they've done all these whiz-bang things. What I see is that that's almost as much news to the administrator as it is to the general public. Because nobody's gone to say to the administrator, is what we're doing now working, before they go and put in something else. So what you're seeing is there's a problem, but it's just being exacerbated. And nobody's actually bothered to recognise it's a problem in the first place. There's a lot more pressure and competition amongst insurers. There always has been competition, but there's even more now because the market, the number of funds out for insurance are reducing. So I think there's a fair amount of insurers' time will be spent on how do we retain this client, when's their next tender, when's that fund, we don't have that fund, but when are they going to tender? Because we need to be on every insurer. Will know when every fund is going to tender because that's key focus. Yes, that's their bread and butter. But it's this constant pressure. And I think intermediaries have a lot to answer for in respect of the operational risk on the group insurance. I think there's been a lot of... And back to what I said about funds doing things. I mean, most trustees don't have two... Well, some do, but not a lot of trustees have a whole lot of ideas about what you can do with insurance. So they've got intermediaries who are saying, well, you can do this and you can do this and we can do this for you. And as far as I'm concerned, at the end of it all, I want money if I die. I want money for my children. I want money for myself if I can't get to retirement to replace my retirement income. And I want money if I can't get out of bed to go to work and earn a dollar. But The industry's almost got too clever for itself. It's coming out with all these fancy arrangements, and I mean, reinstatement of cover would be a classic example. Sounds a great idea to reinstate cover, and trustees, when they're presented with the idea of reinstatement of cover, if somebody's cover falls off, they can get that cover back again without going through all the underwriting, and it sounds like it's a really good thing. So, yes, trustees are obviously trying to do the best thing for their members. Why wouldn't we put that in? We've been advised to put it in. But what you see, and I'll give you an example, you've got somebody who's 50, 55, who's been working, getting some casual work or 15 hours a week, and then they stop getting that. So their cover continues, which happens in most funds, and then their account balance runs out. So that's the end of their insurance, and that's how the terms work. But there are reinstatement terms. So a little while down the track, they get a bit more. They get a few more hours work, 20 hours a week for a while. Oh, good. I can put some money into my super. Some SG's going in there. As soon as the SG hits that account, the premiums come out and down they go again. So I've actually tracked a number of members of funds who've been hit by this, and over a period of, say, 2 years, you've got, these blocks of cover, no cover, cover, no cover. That person wouldn't know, almost certainly wouldn't know, whether they had cover or when they didn't. And Murphy's Law is sure to prevail, and they'd need the cover when it wasn't covered. And they're not getting anything into their retirement savings. I mean, I'm the greatest advocate for insurance, but for insurance when people want it and need it. And I think those people need to understand, they need to be able to make a decision that if they start getting contributions, that they want that cover to continue or start up again, because it's just completely eroding people's any chance of retirement savings in that circumstance. Competition affects, as I said, data integrity, it's a key issue for APRA. They're concerned about it. We've all seen funds, suddenly there's an insurer gets a phone call, we want you to tender, and we want it next week. Well, and half the information. I know it'll be right, and then it turns out that a whole lot of people who looked like they were white-collar workers turned out to be blue-collar workers, and they may have been working overseas, and they may... far different to what was first presented that ends up being put in place, and then the problems start later. Or there's not enough data, but we'll send you some more data after, and the data comes, 2 days before the final decision is to be made. Well, insurers and reinsurers are in an impossible situation there. Pricing is... It's constantly about price, and you see it. I've worked with across the spectrum, and I've worked with an insurer, and I think it's no different anywhere. They're constantly being asked, can you look at this? Can you look at this? Can you bring these figures down a bit? Can you try and match this? But it's not about that. It should be looked at, can we deliver? Can this be delivered, and can this be administered? And I don't see that question's being asked nearly enough, if at all. The automatic acceptance levels, as I said, they're really going higher and higher. And whilst I think it's great to have an automatic level of cover for people who generally wouldn't think about it, but families will be very grateful when, something happens and, it's almost like years ago when they used to sell insurance in pubs. And there were plenty of widows who were very grateful, even though the husband may have been a bit under the weather at the time and just signed a form. It's really not all that much different, because there are people who will end up being and won't have to sell the house because there was some cover they didn't know was there. But certainly you need to be able to, those people to opt out of the cover, they need to understand it. And we all know it's a problem getting people to read these things. And they generally only read them at claim time. And we need to have people, I think, yes, the opt-out, that's certainly important. And I think the ability of people to fix cover and to increase their cover as they want it. The terms, of the policy analysts. I said, they're really, some of them are just trying to be too clever. I think it really comes back to a bit of a reality check of what's important and what is administrable. Is that the word? Policy terms and conditions are obviously the basis of the group insurance arrangement. I am constantly reading policies as part of strategic and operational risk reviews. And when I'm struggling to read a policy, we've got problems. Really struggling and taking me ages and ages and a squillion cross-references, and it's not circuitous, they don't link up. I mean, it doesn't always happen, and they've got better over time, but there are still an awful lot of overly convoluted policies out there, which how would a member possibly read them? It's not, you know, the plain English is easier said than done, but there's a lot that can be done. And I talked about circuitous, you know, not necessarily complete. It doesn't all link up. It's this jigsaw puzzle that all has to link together. And they've got to be unambiguous. And they're frequently not. I often look and I can guess what they meant because I've been around long enough and I understand what they should have meant. But they don't actually mean what they literally say. This is a big issue, the member communications aligned to policies. I could honestly say in the last 2.5 years that I've been at PFS and I've been doing a lot of this work outside a particular corporate, that I have seen one PDS that I thought was a good reflection of a policy. There's lots of people make good attempts, but there are, and you hear, oh, but the lawyers signed off. Yeah, but the lawyers didn't necessarily understand how insurance worked. So there's a place for the lawyers, but you need to have that real sign-off to make sure that they really do. And people do the best of intention, and they're really trying to have a PDS that's friendly and easy to read and have got the facts, but there's an awful lot of facts in group insurance, and if they're not properly reflected, it does become a problem. And as I said, if it gets in front of the SCT, well, it's going to be what's best and what's the members been told. Systems, we're trying at working on systems that have never been designed for insurance, let alone highly complex insurance that's continually changing. The administration, the underwriting, the claims all need to be aligned. And I'll give you an example. I remember the first time, and I've heard it lots of different places, of a claim, having a discussion with a claims person, and said, oh, but when we've done this for years. We've worked this out. You know, we've always done it this way. Well, where's the policy? No, we've always done it this way. There's only one thing that needs to be next to that claims assessor. I mean, obviously experience, but they need to be looking at that policy because that's it. That's the only thing they should be assessing against. And as I said, the knowledge level of administrators. So what can go wrong? Look, I put a couple at the back of these slides. I put about three sheets from a few other examples so you can take them. I think you all get a copy of the slides, obviously time, and we want to leave time for questions. But incorrectly applied AALs, I can tell you some horrendous stories. You know, and I'll give you a quick example of, and it's all been fixed, and nobody can possibly pick where it was from. So, but in a PDS, $600,000 AAL was available for groups of 600 or more, and came across a plan that should have been one-time salary, but somehow somebody got the idea that, there were 600 people in this, so they got $600,000. It turned out they're all white-collar workers. They were loaded as white-collar workers. They were all loading trucks. You know, so that's the sort of thing that can happen. And I don't think they were all Australian residents. So some pretty horrendous things. I won't go through all these because I know we want time for questions. Oh, when I talk about double payment of insured benefits there, I mean, I don't know how many people have ever sat down to try and explain to somebody who hasn't had a lot of experience in group insurance the difference between a death benefit and an insured death benefit. It's not easy for people to grasp, and I've seen the situation where they've actually, both has been paid. So what can be done? Increasing awareness, we've really got to get, I'd like the trustees are the ones who really need to understand the awareness, but everybody does, because if I asked here or I asked across the industry or this whole conference, where does the operational risk lie, I would get a squillion different answers, but I don't think I would get all the answers across where it is. And if you're looking at funds or you're pricing funds, never assume anything. Better go in assuming nothing is actually happening, and review regularly. Make sure, well, what you said you were supporting is actually continuing to happen, and really understand that underlying operational risk. Look, I just put a question here, for a general question anyway, and this was done before last Friday. Do the proposed APRA prudential regulations go far enough to be a thorough safeguard? I'm very encouraged by Friday. I think that's a lot further. I think it can go a bit further yet. I notice it says policies relevant to the offering of insured benefits or the acquiring of insurance in respect of those benefits that include but are not limited to the process by which the premiums are recovered, the underwriting of the claims assessment. We're still missing that. Do the members have the cover that policy says they should have? That's the critical thing.
Thank you, Rhonda. Questions for Rhonda?
Thanks for that. Dave Miller, two questions around, I guess, your opinion on the role of trustees. So from what you're saying before, and I guess a little bit of my own opinion, is that the trustees are pretty responsible for a lot of the op risk that's been generated. I wonder what your opinion is on how much the trustees are responsible for making sure their members are aware of the cover that they have, and the examples that you were giving before about people going in and out of cover based on their account balance and things like that. That's the first one. And the second one, with the competitive nature of pricing, especially at the moment, and the severe amount of churn that's going on at the moment, are the trustees really doing right by their members in shipping the group policies around as much as they are, and potentially increasing the operational risk above what it would otherwise be?
First question, I think it's a real issue of there's obviously gatekeepers out there, and that's the executive of fund, and they've got a place. And I see across the spectrum, I see executives who everything is transparent to the trustees. The trustees, if there's a problem, the trustees know. And they're obviously at the middle ground, and then you get the other end of the spectrum who, well, they're making sure that their position is solid. And generally, I've had it said to me, oh, we wouldn't want to get the trustees worrying there's something wrong. And that is very scary. I think trustees, yes, they know they should be acting in the interests of members, and I think they want to. But I think that the number of times I hear, as soon as the trustees' insurance issue comes up at the trustee board, the eyes roll here, oh, not another darn insurance claim problem. But they don't understand. They don't know this. Getting this in front of a trustee, I think, would make a whole lot of difference. I mean, you people understand a lot of this, but we've got to be able to get it to that level, and then I think we'll be in a better position. Because, I mean, if I was a trustee and I had this put in front of me, it'd scare the daylights out of me. So I think that's important. As for moving insurers, I don't think it's... yes, when you change the terms. I think more, not so much changing the insurer, but changing the terms and conditions. And that can happen within insurers. So I almost see as much problem, but yes, changing administrators is a huge issue. Changing administrators, changing insurers, but changing the terms and conditions. I'd almost put that ahead of changing because nobody's looking to say, is it working now? Does that answer you?
David Morris, One observation and one question, and this is from the background of having run an administration company, a life company and a reinsurer. One of the aspects that's always overlooked is this whole question of the cash flows, both the delay in getting money and also the accuracy of it, because given that if anyone's making any profit out of it, it's probably more related to interest. And given that the reinsurers probably do most of the pricing and they get the worst deal because they get delays in getting the information both from the administrator and the direct company, it seems to me that somewhere in all this regulation and control that cash flow really needs to be looked at, and I guess it's covered by a couple of your headings. But the question is that it's been the same for the last 20 years, or probably 25 years. I don't think it's got worse. It may have improved marginally. Are you optimistic that something really is going to change this time?
Gee, I'm glad you got to that last question, because I just kept on thinking he said I was a bush actuary. Yes, I am. I think it's got a long way to go. I'm encouraged, but gee, there's a lot to be done, and it's serious. It is really serious. I see some horrendous things. But I always say to funds and it comes down to the funds doing something, and I always say, and APRA's, you know, they're on the case and they're getting much more aware, but I say to funds, I was approached for an operational risk review a little while ago, and the person who approached me said, "This stuff keeps me awake at night." And I said, "That's fantastic." "It's great, because at least you're realising it. And it doesn't matter. Yes, we'll find problems, but at least you're doing something about it." It's when, you know, you go to a meeting and somebody says, I actually had it said to me the other week. "Do you know, I added up all the years of experience that we've got in our executive team. We've got this, you know, we're really in a good position." Somebody said to me once, there's a difference between 20 years experience and 20 years of experience. I mean, if anybody wanted to look on the PFS website and add up the years of experience of all the people at PFS, it'd be embarrassing. But nobody there would say they were all experts on group insurance. Or it's just that, it's a start. It's a start. I'm hoping it's a way forward, but it's a long way to go. And it's, what we've got to hope is that a lot more work gets done on this area before some of those big claims hit, because the industry can't take too many of those big claims. Sorry.
David Rush from APRA. Yes, we are concerned. And in fact, there are a number of things that we'll be doing, and this is actually one of our major risks that we are looking at. In terms of do the proposed APRA potential regulations go far enough? And I think you said that, yeah, they've gone a long way, but there's still more that can be done. Can I urge you, and can I urge everybody else, if there is a feeling that more can be done, well, please make your submission.
Thanks, David. First of all, I was wondering where you were, so thank you. I'd like to catch up with you after. I certainly will be putting in a few more comments, but it's good, because I was getting a bit, it's never going to get through, but it did. It started to get through. That last Friday, I went home quite, I know I'm a bit strange, but I felt quite happy about it all.
Time for one more question.
Andrea McDonald. Thanks, Rhonda. And that was really interesting, just you're pointing out how there's a lot of people in the industry actually trying to make all this really work. And one of the concerns that I have is, are there actually the resources in the industry to be able to do everything that is being asked in the standards? So I would say that it's some of the things that are in the standards are actually a very big step from where we are now, and I think a lot of trustees will struggle to do some of the things that are being required of them where we are at the moment, so that things need to go a long way. Well, one of the things that I found that was interesting in there is that one of the obligations on trustees is to determine the reasonableness of the premiums. And I'm just wondering what you think trustees will do to determine that.
I think that that's almost an accurate question, but I think that a few things there. The coming back to the strategy side, and this is why I'm so pleased that things have moved on, because up until, and I've been putting submissions in and submissions in, but up until, does that say I stop or I've got a couple of minutes? The up until this last round, I thought, and I'd even said this in my submission, that any fund could almost say, oh yes, we're doing these things now in respect of, you know, how do we choose an insurer, we go to tender, we do these things. And I just thought, this is too easy to get through, because I thought they could really do it then. I think that, yes, there's, I don't think so much, if trustees recognise, and I think the big thing is that first thing I said, that trustees, it's put in writing, you know, the insurance management framework. Once trustees see that that's in there, their governance people are going to be having to put in front of the trustees, this is something that's got to be addressed. That's a big step. That's a big step to getting trustees to recognise or to think about the operational risk. I don't think it's even been thought about. So I think things can be done, but one of the things, I mean, that back to the question about changing insurers. Instead of everybody rushing out to the market and changing, let's fix a lot of the things that are happening now. And I think if we did it in a sensible manner like that, then we'd have a chance.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much, Rhonda, for sharing your experience. It's extremely insightful, all the practical issues that affect complex operation of group risk. If I could ask you to thank Rhonda very much for her very insightful.